This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Spoiler number one is Dr. Lee Franz.
It stinks.
What is going on? What is going on?
Welcome to the It Was a Thing on TV podcast, episode 9, submission 195, the 1983 Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. This aired on NBC on November 24th, 1983, and it was hosted by Bryant Gumbel with Sarah Purcell reporting from the street. And we're not going to have an open, partially because it's truncated, but also because it's a really long opening, and it sort of gives away a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about, the specific acts.
We don't want to spoil the acts for
you. And we want
you all to just enjoy this as we are enjoying it.
Indeed. And we mentioned in the Mr. Smith episode that Mr. Smith and Leonard Fry, they took part in the 1983 Thanksgiving Day Parade, which is sort of the genesis of this episode. And there's a lot more that we're going to talk about than Mr. Smith and Leonard Fry. But that was sort of the birth of this episode. As we mentioned in the Match Game Hollywood Squares episode, and also, I believe, Mr. Smith, this was another tool for NBC to promote as much stuff as they could, as much of their in-house property as they could. They did actually promote one or two shows that were not on NBC, albeit maybe very indirectly or very subtly, just because those people or those properties were on a different network. We'll get to those as we go along here. So the parade itself, I actually took time out of my life and I copied all the acts that performed in the parade, not including balloons, except for one giant exception, which we'll get to in a little bit. And I didn't include bands. Nothing against the bands. It's just they didn't bring anything to the festivities for this podcast. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, they were just saying, and it was good. It was awesome.
And we love bands. Chico's a musician, or at least a singer, and I played marching band in high school. And Greg can carry a tune if he tried, I think.
Hey, the bands are great, but we're not here for the bands. We're here for the people that are here to promote their stuff.
We're here for the celebrities.
And by the way, Mike, I have something to say. The 1983 Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is brought to you by Radio Shack, your Christmas electronic store. I feel like heading on up to Radio Shack right now and getting some Christmas. Oh, wait.
Yeah, about that.
Hey, 1983 would have been about the Christmas that my cousin, who would have been like three at the time, he would have been four, and oh my gosh, this is maybe the most annoying Christmas present ever, and it was a Radio Shack Christmas present. It was a fire helmet with a little flashing light on it, like a siren light, and it had a loud siren.
So
my cousin loved that. Whoever got the gift, all the adults, like, immediately regretted it. Oh my God! I need to tell my cousin about that when I see him on Thanksgiving, because that's been a running joke in the family for like 35 years. That friggin' fire helmet that was just like had no volume control and annoyed the parents within about 2 minutes of coming out of the box.
So it was like the Star Trek toy with the alarm that wouldn't stop going.
Well, it you could turn it off, but it didn't have volume control. And the volume was on like, okay, Spinal Tap went to 11. This is at like 14. And I mean, you can hear it from clear across the house, not the room, the house. Wah.
Okay.
It didn't come. But yeah, that's the quality electronics that Radio Shack made back in the day. Boy, I wonder why they're closed. Because Best Buy just absolutely killed them in the home electronics market. Okay.
You're welcome, by the way.
Yep. Okay, first, we start off with an NBC property. Surprise, surprise, hashtag corporate synergy. Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Aww.
And they're singing Tomorrow from Annie.
And again,
which I believe they actually did on the series.
And remember that the voices of the Chipmunks were very high. So it sounded like, you know, like three teenage boys whose testicles hadn't dropped yet singing.
Tomorrow, tomorrow, I love you tomorrow.
That's more like Elmo singing it. But yeah. And did you hear the motherly voice?
When you gotta clean up your toys? When you gonna do your homework? Tomorrow, tomorrow, I'll do it tomorrow.
So Alvin and the Chipmunks were just promoting procrastination.
That's exactly what you want to hear on Thanksgiving when you're with your family.
Exactly. That's not the moral I want to take away from Thanksgiving or any time from three adorable, oversized rodents.
Who are incredibly who just happen to be incredibly talented.
They were only talented because of Rog Bagdasari Garshian or whatever his name was.
Ross Bagdasarian, yeah.
Yeah, easy for you to say.
I gotta say, it was great booking by Dave Seville to put them in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. I gotta give him credit for that.
And by Dave Seville, you do mean the head of programming at NBC.
Yes, Mr. Grant Tinker.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Second, and I have nothing bad to say about this. Is that what this is going to be? This is going to be, we're going to say bad stuff about us the entire episode. Ballet Hispanico of New York did a very good job.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then we go back to the NBC promotion machine. Laura Jill Miller from Gimme a Break with the Care Bears.
Oh.
And they were singing.
Yeah, not many people know that Laura Jill Miller is actually an accomplished vocalist.
Yeah, she did a good job, but... And actually, Care Bears, that would actually air on ABC. Well, it gives the dates 1985 and 88, but it also says syndication. So, yes, well, Care Bears were popular. I can vouch for that. My sister had a bunch of them when she was that age in 1983, 84. And it was actually really big because of the American Greetings card company. That's how it started, was their characters for American Greetings. So, and that was right when they hit their not necessarily their peak, their ascent. I would say once they hit the cartoon, that's sort of like your peak. But yeah, they were getting very popular in 1983, so that was a timely addition. And yeah, Laura Jill Miller did a very good job singing. I didn't take note of what she was singing, but again, she did a very good job, but again, there's the NBC promotion machine working in overdrive.
Yeah.
And then after that, the cast of Taking My Turn.
What?
Never heard of it. Never heard of it. The one name I heard and recognized was Marnie Nixon. And you're probably saying, who's that? And I just recognized that. I didn't say I knew who that was.
Yeah, you want to educate us?
Absolutely. So, Marnie Nixon looks like she did just a bunch of Broadway work. She was a singing voice of lead actresses on the soundtracks of several musicals, including Deborah Carr in The King and I, Natalie Wood in West Side Story, and Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady. So she was more of a singer, a Broadway type, than she was an NBC actor or actress. And actually, I don't see really anything that she had done on TV. She was in Mulan. She was the singing voice of Grandmother Fa.
I can see that.
That's pretty nice.
But yeah, I really don't see anything television related. Oh, here. If I scroll down in the Wikipedia to the television part, she did not do much television. She was in an episode of The Mothers-in-Law. Oh, hey, just by that name, I think that's an entry. The Mothers-in-Law. And she was in an episode of Law and Order Special Victims Unit in 2001.
Doink, doink.
There's some other things in here that she did, a TV movie. But, yeah, she didn't do much TV. And the Mothers-in-Law, okay, yeah, this is something we need to cut. Well, yeah, it ran for a year and a half. We can cover it. Eve Arden and Kay Ballard.
Oh, yeah, that's in. That's okay. In. That's in all day.
And it's on DVD because there's actually a picture of the complete series DVD. Oh, wait, for a period of time, MeTV offered select episodes of the series for viewing online on its website. Okay. So there's got to be some of it out there. Oh, and Desi Arnaz was in a couple episodes. Desi Arnaz Jr. So before he was Auto Man or Walter, he was on The Mothers-in-Law. I wonder if him and Chuck Wagner got on The Mothers-in-Law one day and took him to Zippers. Desi Arnaz Jr. would have been young. Maybe he showed his zipper. Never mind.
Oh, God. That's terrible.
Oh, God. Oh, Christ.
Oh, Richard Deacon was on it, too. Oh, Mr. Rutherford.
Very timely.
Bloated Mr. Rutherford from Match Game Hollywood Squares. Okay, after taking my turns, cast performed. It was, guess what, another NBC show. Shirt Tales!
I loved Shirt Tales. Oh my gosh.
I didn't get Shirt Tales. Maybe it's just me, but yeah, they were singing, and I'm going to actually use the language I wrote in the notes here. They were singing and doing some shit. I don't know what they were doing. They're just doing some crap.
Okay, and now next, Bryant and Sarah get like some notes from like some clowns. From a special recognition by the National Television Academy.
Yeah, they swapped presents. Sarah gave him a gift. Brian gave her a gift. Obviously, this is all staged. Brian opens his, and he sees this commendation that Greg talked about. And then Sarah opens hers, and it has a similar commendation in a nice frame. Aw, cute. Then the National Dance Institute performed. And they performed to, and maybe this is the most 1983 song they could have chosen, What a Feeling.
Flashdance, What a Feeling.
The Flashdance theme or song. Don't know if it's the theme per se. I think it was.
It was the theme.
Yeah. So that's about as 83 as you can get, Flashdance.
Because nothing says Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade like a song from a movie about a stripper who just wants to dance.
Hey, that was the thing in 1983. My mom dragged me to that movie, and she covered my eyes during the nudity part. Darn it, Mom. Could have seen my first...
Okay!
My first memories at age 8. Okay.
No.
Thanks for the memories!
No.
I'm just telling the truth. My mother did drag me to that movie. I didn't watch it. She spent $4 or whatever to drag me there because she was too cheap to hire a babysitter or because Dad was broke and couldn't take me. Okay. Right. Enough angst from my childhood. Right. Okay.
Okay.
Back to the NBC promotion machine we go.
Here we go.
Joey Lawrence from Give Me a Break.
All right, folks. Now buckle up.
Yeah, we have a Joey Lawrence sighting. That's the NBC promotion machine at work again. Remember, Joey Lawrence was on Give Me a Break at the time. So we've got two Give Me a Break stars already in the first, like, half an hour. And Joey Lawrence was in the Flintstones car with Fred, Wilma, Barney, Betty, and Dino, and they performed Jingle Bell Rock. Whoa! That wasn't scripted, no. Not at all.
You know what? know what Joey's reaction was when he first saw Fred and Barney? Whoa!
Do you know what his reaction was when the car didn't slow down in time because their foot brakes weren't working?
Whoa!
Whoa! The reaction that Joey had when Dino put his head above the roof of the car and did all the things that he did.
Whoa!
Whoa!
I refuse to answer that one.
He was a one-dimensional character.
Whoa!
That's all he's famous for. Well, I shouldn't say that's all he's famous for. But that's like the big thing he's famous for. And that wouldn't come for another 8 years. It wasn't until Blossom when he did that.
Another 8 years. Whoa.
All right, now we get it. This is the one exception to the rule I mentioned earlier about balloons. And I know Greg, just based on the way he's laughing, has something to say about this. There was a Superman balloon. Greg?
Yeah, and when you see it at about 35-minute mark, the Superman balloon's like is like stuck in a street corner, and he's got his arms flared and his head down. And I think I know why. It's because Superman's like, no, I don't want to show my face. I was in a crappy movie in 1983 with Richard Pryor and Robert Vaughn. No, I'm not showing my face here at the parade for you people.
And the camera, like, focused on this for probably, what, a good 3-4 minutes? They actually spent way too much time just focusing on Superman not moving. It looked like the baby was crowning for about 3 or 4 minutes. He's sort of, like, peeking around the street corner. Is it okay to come out? Can I come out now? And then, you know, finally after he gets untangled, they bring him down the street. But he's just, like, sticking his neck out, you know, as he flies over New York City in the parade. You just see like his head, his neck, and maybe the top half of his chest, and he's just standing there for a good 3 or 4 minutes. It caught Greg's eye. Let's just say that.
Yes.
Then
we get into Cats.
Yes, we get into the Cats performing. I didn't recognize the song, so it wasn't memory or anything like that.
I'm going to get into a rant here. You know how we have the soon-to-be crappy Cats movie coming out?
Cringy, crappy Cats movie?
Yes. It's like, have we gotten so cheap that we can't afford actors and makeup?
Well, I think it may be just more of a laborious procedure, because it takes time to put on that makeup.
Yep.
Yeah, but if that cast can go on every single night for, like, what, 20 years? Come on! You can at least put Taylor Swift in some makeup.
There's so many things that you can say to that.
Oh, and I've got one of them. How dare you put anything on Taylor Swift? She'll write a song about you.
Oh, jeez.
And then after Cats, actually this was how the show started, but they went back to him for whatever reason, because maybe he was at the Bryant Gumbel part of the parade where he was reporting. Charlie Pride was atop a turkey, and he was singing, and Charlie Pride was a country singer, or is. I think he's still alive.
He is still alive.
So yeah, it's not a was, it's an is. So... yeah, Charlie Pride performed a song, and my big takeaway of this was maybe about 2 minutes into the song, he pulls out his current album on vinyl and just shows it off while he's singing, like a subtle plug for his album. Go buy my album. This is perfect for stockings.
It's like, my album's about to drop. It's sick. Like, he's the 1983 version of those people that would go on the corner trying to show you their mix CD of all their songs.
Did you just compare Charlie Pride to Chance the Rapper?
I think he just did. He's not wrong.
He's not wrong. I'm just pointing that out.
After Charley Pride, oh, this is another one I know Greg has a lot to say about.
Oh, yes.
The cast of We've Got It Made.
Oh, but yes.
And they're singing High Hopes.
Yes.
But in addition, I know Greg has stuff to say about that.
Yeah.
But in addition, on the float were Spider-Man and Captain America.
Oh, yes. It's amazing. It's great that the crowd of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade got a chance to see America's ass up close at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
America's ass? Are you talking about Tom Ballard?
Oh, no.
I love when I tell a Marvel Cinematic Universe joke and Mike has no idea what I'm talking about.
I don't. You're absolutely right.
And you think it's a subtle take on Tom Ballard, God rest his soul? No.
Although, I gotta say, Tom Ballard is America's second ass.
I was gonna say Bonnie Urseth, but no, that's getting even worse. So, moving on really fast. Did you want to say anything about the singing?
I do. Yeah. You have Matt McCoy singing, folks. You have Lloyd frickin' Braun from Seinfeld singing at the parade. Like, how glorious is that?
The only thing that was missing was Chuck Wagner singing, but that's on another network.
And that's at Zippers.
And I also wanted to mention, it does make sense for Spider-Man and Captain America to be on this float, because at this time, NBC would have still been airing Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Another possible installment.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the cast of We Got It Made and Spidey and Captain America, Peter Billingsley, hey, another NBC personality. Real people.
And not only that, but he's about to make it big because 1983 is going to be the year of A Christmas Story.
Which I don't believe was mentioned. No. I only skimmed through it, but I don't believe that was mentioned. And also, remember, Christmas Story wasn't a hit to begin with.
No, it was not.
It didn't become a hit until TBS started running it ad nauseum on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Well, no, because it was already a hit. Because I remember, like, in 1989 or 90 or whatever, like, WPIX would show it all the time every Christmas.
Well, I think it didn't get big on a national level till TBS did it. And I'm guessing that was probably in the range of about 20 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Yeah, because...
No, wait, it was 25 years at least.
Oh, my gosh. Jeez. Okay, I thought it was a little more recent than that.
They had the 25th anniversary of 24 Hours of A Christmas Story, and it was this really big deal, and yeah.
That was a thing on TV. No, it's not going to be an installment. But, yeah, I thought it was a little more recent than that because my sister, another person, you know, God rest her soul, this is probably about 2007-ish, maybe about a year and a half before she passed, she had received a Christmas Story board game and a Christmas Story Monopoly. Both sealed, both sitting in my basement. Just saying, if you got a Christmas Story fan out there, make me an offer. But so Peter Billingsley, he was on a rocking turtle float singing If I Could Talk to the Animals. How appropriate being on a rocking turtle float. But the other takeaway I want you to get from this, and this was said by Brian Gumbel, he was the ring bearer at Sarah Purcell's wedding.
Aww.
I thought that was a very nice little fact.
That totally is a nice little fact there.
And she had been married, I believe, earlier that year, so it isn't anything creepy where this little kid just mysteriously is the ring bearer in, like, 1977 when real people wasn't even a thing. So I thought that was a very interesting tidbit.
And before we go, and to tie it back into what we talked about earlier, Peter Billingsley, of course, later would go on to be an instrumental thing into starting the Marvel Cinematic Universe that we mentioned, because he was a producer with Jon Favreau on the first Iron Man movie.
He was.
And he was recently in the last Spider-Man movie that just came out, reprising his role from the first Iron Man movie.
I guess the only thing we didn't mention was his bit role on an Elf.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Elf.
And he was also Messy Mervin on the Hershey's chocolate syrup commercials. Come on.
Oh. You can never forget about Messy Mervin.
Okay. And now I think we've covered the entire career of Peter Billingsley. And it's all because he's saying, if I could talk to the animals on a float. After that, country singer Lynn Anderson sang. Don't know what she sang. I didn't care what she sang. Then Ashford and Simpson, again, 83. That's about the time that Ashford and Simpson were really big. They were singing, and they were aboard a lion float. A lion float.
Wow! Ashford and Simpson.
No. No.
Don't make me turn this car around. Oh my gosh, you actually went there. Okay, now here's the interesting one. Here is the interesting one, and I'll tell you why in a moment. Alfonso Ribeiro.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
He of, like, many things. He of AFV. He of Catch-21. He of the all-new Catch-21. He of the future all-new Catch-21. He was on a float with Snoopy, Garfield, Nancy, Sluggo, and Marmaduke, a tribute to comic strips. And he was singing. Now, here's the big thing, the takeaway from this. This might have been the first time Alfonso Ribeiro was on national TV.
Well, he would have already been on Silver Spoons at this point.
No! What? No! Fall of 84, Alfonso Ribeiro joined the show.
Okay.
Fall of 84. So that's why I said this might have been his first exposure, because Alfonso Ribeiro, at the time, he was in
the Tap Dance Kid on Broadway.
Exactly. And that's actually why he was on the parade. Now, they didn't explicitly say that this was his first national TV appearance, but, you know, given that that the only work he had done before this, he was only 12 years old at the time, was in the Tap Dance Kid, pretty fair to say this might have been his first television exposure.
Well, this was a year before his Pepsi commercial.
Well, now hold on. Now that I'm looking a little bit deeper into this, it does say there's a TV series called Oi Willy.
Oi.
I don't even know what. I've never heard of this. Okay, New York City's Spanish Harlem is setting for a 7-part series about a 12-year-old boy. Well, that sounds more biographical, maybe, than anything else. Okay, it had to be a TV show of some sort, or a miniseries, 7 episodes. And it had Jose Ferrer and Robert Earl Jones. I'm going to guess James Earl Jones's long-lost brother. Who knows? But yeah, and again, he's not even credited as a character, so maybe he was a background character? I don't know. And yeah, looking at Robert Earl Jones, he looks just like his brother. Oh, father of James Earl Jones. I apologize. Father of James Earl Jones. But yeah, obviously there's a family resemblance there. So maybe this was his first national exposure, because it looks like this Oi Willy was a BBC production? I don't know. But it's definitely before Silver Spoons. It preceded it by a good 9-10 months.
Then, it is amazing to see Garfield right behind Alfonso Ribeiro.
Oh yeah, all the comic strip characters. Snoopy, Garfield, Marmaduke. Well, okay, one of those things is not like the other. Marmaduke sucks. Then we get back into, again, another thing from 1983. It's actually still popular nowadays, I believe, due to Discovery Family Channel. I think they had a cartoon series about this within the last number of years. Strawberry Shortcake and Friends. Another thing my sister just had everything of. Strawberry Shortcake, My Little Pony, Care Bears. And she had a Cabbage Patch Kid. Oh, that's like the one thing we're missing here. There are no Cabbage Patch Kids. And Cabbage Patch Kids were the thing to get in 1983 for Christmas.
Yeah, it almost seems sacrilegious that you have a parade in 1983, but no mention of the Cabbage Patch Kids.
Now, I wonder, since this was an NBC broadcast on one of the other networks, did they possibly have the Cabbage Patch Kids?
Hold up, because I know a Cabbage Patch Christmas was a thing. Because, believe it or not, it was the very first thing my mom ever taped on a VCR was the Cabbage Patch Kids Christmas special.
I can't believe it.
I cannot believe I'm admitting that. It would be the next year. Hold on a second. December 7th, 1984. Nothing about a network.
It could have been syndicated.
Yeah, syndication was really big and, well, started to get big in 1983.
I know this was a network. I know, because I remember watching the VCR tape. It was definitely a network. I think it might have been CBS.
That's going to be the spinoff podcast. We think it was a thing on TV. Okay. But yeah, it's like, of all the properties around that time, the cartoon characters and all that, the Cabbage Patch Kids weren't on this. But also at the same time, Cabbage Patch Kids didn't fall in the American Greetings family with Strawberry Shortcake and Care Bears and Shirt Tails. So,
and there's other characters from Cleveland. Yes, there was a company called Those Characters from Cleveland, and they licensed all the sort of characters there.
That's news to me, and I've lived here all my life. Interesting.
I think it was owned by American Greetings, now that I think about it.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised because, yeah, those characters were created by American Greetings employees, so I would not be surprised at all. Greg.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Smith and Leonard Fry.
Oh, yes, this is what we all came here for, baby. There's Mr. Smith and Leonard Fry in a car, and Leonard Fry is waving to the crowd with a bunch of the other people on the car, and Mr. Smith's just like, Mr. Smith's waving to the crowd too.
Hey, he's a smart cookie and a top banana, and I'm running out of jokes here. So,
sadly, Bryant or Sarah does not mention. You can see Leonard tomorrow afternoon on the Magic Game Hollywood Squares Hour.
Again, wasted opportunity.
Hashtag Leonard will have 30.
And it didn't really help because, as you know from episode 2, Mr. Smith was canceled within the month. It didn't even get to see Christmas of 83. And they put so much promotion into it. Man. Well, that's just typical of NBC in the early 80s. And we'll get to a couple of reasons why in the month of December. No spoilers. This is, again, definitely something from 83. Fraggle Rock.
Nice.
And they actually had like a giant Fraggle Rock float. Yeah, like the rock formations and all that. And they sang like an extended version of the theme song. It wasn't the regular theme song. It was like an extended version. They didn't have the dog, though. The dog or the owner Sprocket of the dog.
Docker. No, they don't have a Docker Sprocket on the floats or anything. And here's why. Because I learned this from watching a defunct TV sort of mini on Jim Henson, that Fraggle Rock was actually a show that was meant to be franchised all over the world. I mean, every country in the world has their own version of Doc and Sprocket.
Yeah, every country has, like, the BBC version of Fraggle Rock has their own version of Doc and Sprocket, where, like, actually, Doc is a captain. Yeah,
the captain and Sprocket.
They did have four life-size Fraggles, four people in outfits dancing with the what looked like the actual puppets. But also another thing I noticed, and this happened at least two, maybe three times when I was watching the parade, there must have been some fraggles that didn't have people controlling it, because they just had like frozen looks on their faces. They're sort of looking up into the sky, mouth open, like they just saw Halley's Comet 3 years earlier or something. Again, I don't know if that was lack of personnel or what have you. It just looked really weird. And then after Fraggle Rock, we get more shirt tails, because we need all the shirt tails we can get in life. And then they had this person, or these people, didn't actually perform. They must have been special guests, maybe grand marshals or something in that realm. I know you know the first name. You may not know the second name, or at least why that person is famous. Walter and Gracie Lance.
Oh, I know. The Woody Woodpecker guy.
The Woody Woodpecker guy. And Gracie voiced Woody Woodpecker, at least the And so they were just waving. And I thought it was interesting. Walter Lance actually pulled out a camera, a big camera, and was taking pictures of the crowd, which I thought was really cool. And, of course, what would follow Walter and Gracie Lance, the creator and the sound, or the famous sound effect of Woody Woodpecker? Why, it would be the Woody Woodpecker balloon. I just thought that was not necessarily the tie-in. Oh, look, it's Walter Lance, and oh, it's his creation behind him. I thought it was really cool just having Walter Lance there. That yes. really is cool. And he was taking pictures of the crowd. I think that really shows how excited he was to be there.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you usually don't see celebrities, at least in 1983, taking pictures of the crowd there to say, hey, I was actually here.
I mean, nowadays... enjoying himself and everything, yeah.
Well, I mean, nowadays, if you ever watch parades, not that I do often, but everybody at the parade has their cell phone out taking video or taking pictures. And so he was like an innovator of sorts at the time.
He was a pioneer.
He was. I really thought that was cool. And now, here's another one where I think Greg may lose it.
Oh.
We have a lobster float. A lobster float. And this person sang, "What a Beautiful Morning." John Bauman.
Yes. Because nothing says "What a Beautiful Morning" like it being performed by Bowser.
No, again, no. Missed opportunity.
It aired at 3 in the afternoon. It would be "What a Beautiful Afternoon." It didn't air. It didn't air in the morning. I'm sorry, guys. It aired after school. That's why I loved it so much when I was a kid.
But yeah, missed opportunity. It's like Brian Gumble really could have said, "Hey, it's the host of the Magic 8 Ball Hollywood Squares Hour."
He did say that.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, we got the plug in for Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour.
Or whatever good that did.
And, oh, another person who's on an NBC show. And we talked about him. This would have been episode 4? Yeah, would have been episode 4, I believe. Jennifer slept here. Glenn Scarpelli.
Oh, yes.
He was aboard a doodle bug, which is basically a float that looks sort of like a giant caterpillar and is sort of like zigzagging around the parade route. I guess that's what a doodle bug does. And he was singing "Don't Mess Up This Good Thing" from his new album.
What?
We actually talked about it on an episode with Chris Lane that Glenn Scarpelli cut a record.
Yeah, and it was promoted. It was mentioned that it was from his new album, "Don't Mess Up This Good Thing." Since I didn't want to listen to it, and I doubt it even hit the top 100, I just skipped over it. But yeah, Glenn Scarpelli, he did release an album in the early 80s. And then after Glenn, I think this is our first celebrity that non-singing celebrity that doesn't have a tie to NBC, at least. NBC in 1983. Eddie Albert was on a float a dog float with the winner of the Great American Dog Contest. And, of course, he was singing. I think he was in Broadway at the time. I didn't know what he sang, but, yeah, Eddie Albert was there. Should have been there with Arnold Ziffel. If Arnold Ziffel couldn't have made it, he could have gone to the store and bought a package of Oscar Mayer hot dogs and a package of Oscar Mayer bacon.
Oh, no, 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 that's horrible.
But awfully delicious. Apologies to the vegans out there.
You go to your room and think about what you did, Mike.
Only if I can go to my room and think about this person. Ha 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 ha. Miss America was in the parade. Who was Miss America in 1983?
Vanessa Williams.
Vanessa Williams. And she was aboard a New York float singing New York, New York.
Which is what she does. She's a singer.
Well, a couple months later, it'd be found out that she did a little more than singing.
Yeah.
She was in Penthouse. Boy, Rick Fox is a lucky man.
Sorry, Hit on the House.
Yes.
I did that just for Chico to do his Tar Heel bit. And then Lou Rawls, he was aboard an Olympic tribute float, because remember, 1984, the Olympics were coming to L.A., and the Olympics were like the big thing. I mean, where's
the... That was basically the 1980s in a nutshell.
That was 1983 and 1984 in one giant ball, and I'm still waiting for my official Olympic dental floss from that year. So Lou Rawls was aboard an Olympic tribute float sponsored by Bush, and there were Clydesdales. There were Clydesdales. Who doesn't love the Clydesdales?
Yeah, those Clydesdales have to be long dead by now.
And you... Okay, wait. You got mad when I made a joke about Arnold Ziffel and the bacon and hot dogs.
I was just about to say, Greg needs to go to his room and think about what...
When did I make a comment about
that word
in Ziffel?
No, I did that, but you
talked about dead horses. You literally beat a dead horse.
Yes, I literally beat a dead horse.
I mean, seriously, the only thing you didn't put in there is, oh, I bet those horses are in a can of Alpo now.
Oh, for the love Can we please move on?
No, you cannot make me go to my room.
Can we please move on to anything else here?
He actually sang Wind Beneath My Wings. And that was different because I'm used to the version that that Bette Midler sings. And so I found that very interesting. First, I didn't know that Wind Beneath My Wings was a thing before Bette Midler did her. But yeah, that was a good rendition like that of that song. It took a little while to get used to it, but that was really good. I mean, Lou Rawls, I wouldn't expect anything bad from him, but just that rendition was just unexpectedly good.
That was incredible.
Then the Boys Choir of Harlem, they sang White Christmas. And then we had Tommy Tune and Twiggy. Boy, that's like diametrically opposed. They were singing and they were starring in My One and Only at the time on Broadway.
Yeah,
I fast forwarded through that now. This is a bone of contention between me and Chico, and this goes back to a comment I made in the Mr. Smith episode. Next was Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park, and there were a bunch of characters on there. There was Papa Smurf, NBC character, Smurfette, mm-hmm. NBC character, Snagglepuss, Scooby and Scrappy Doo, Huckleberry Hound, The Biscuits from 1983.
Deep cut of cartoons there.
Yeah, and that didn't last past 1984. The Biscuits, Captain Caveman, and if you remember during the Mr. Smith episode, I said, where are the damn snorks? Chico, there was a snork in the Jellystone Park float.
Congratulations, you found the damn snork.
Well, I was right. There was a snork. And then after the cartoon characters, We had Mary Jo Catlett. Mrs. Puff. Mrs. Puff was singing. Oh, hey, another NBC character, because she was on Different Strokes.
Yep.
She replaced Nedra Voles. Damn it, it could have been Nedra Voles singing in the parade.
No, we don't want that.
Don't speak for all of us! Nedra Voles is great.
Mike, it's okay. It's okay, Mike.
Don't disparage the good name of Nedra Voles. And then
I love how you went full. That's right. Don't disparage the name of Nedra Voles.
Hey, I will protect the woman's dignity and pride. She was talented and funny, and she was like 75 at the time. And then we get the Radio City Music Hall Rockettes doing what they do best. Showing off,
of course. Camps.
Yeah, they're doing their kick line deal.
Like bears in court. Awesome.
And then finally, yes, finally, the end of the parade.
We missed the important part with the Hanna-Barbera characters.
You want to say something about the Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park, Greg?
Yes. I found it amazing just to see Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, and Snagglepuss, and all the rest of the gang just dancing and having a good old time.
With the biscuits and a snork.
Yes.
Who wasn't even in the Hanna-Barbera family until a year later. Then we had the Radio City Music Hall Rockettes, and they did their performance. They showed off their legs, did their high kicking and all that.
Bears in court?
Exactly. And then last but not least, every parade ends with the big guy, Santa Claus. Aww.
Which is basically them saying, time to buy stuff.
It's exactly what it is. It's saying, Santa's coming in about a month. If you've been a little brat the last 11 months, you got 1 month to change your ways. You know you want that Transformer or GoBot or that infernal siren helmet I mentioned that my cousin had when he was 4 years old. If you really want that, you're going to be a good boy or a good girl for the next month.
I'm sure there's room to negotiate. No, there's not, is there?
No, there's never room to negotiate with Santa. He sees you when you're sleeping, and he knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good. For goodness sake.
Because you better not pout. You better not cry. Better be good, because we're telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
And he's bringing the hookup, so you better watch it.
Did we just do a spoken word version of Santa Claus is coming to town?
Why, yes. Yes, we did.
Oh, my. So, yeah, the NBC promotion machine was in full gear, and we had some good singing, we had some bad singing. We had a lot of cartoon characters, and the 1983 Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, it was a thing on TV. And you'll get to see it again this year in a couple of days if you're listening to this on Monday or Tuesday of this week. Well, as always, you can find us online. You can find everything for us, our Instagram link, our Twitter link, our Facebook link, our Tumblr, whatever else we have out there. Our email address. Oh, our email address. We'll get to that in a second. We're at itwasathingontv.com. Tell your friends. Tell your friends' friends. And tell your mother, too, while we're at it. I don't know why we don't want to tell your mother, but just do it.
Yeah. Tell your friends. Tell your mom. Tell your friend's mom.
Say hi to your mother for us.
And tell your mom's friends, too. Hey, they might enjoy it. You never know.
Maybe someone's mother is a big fan of, like, Peter Billingsley or Alfonso Ribeiro.
People love old TV. It brings back just such good memories. Well, okay, maybe old TV, good TV, but not Not the subjects that are on this show.
No.
Sorry to disappoint if you came for a retrospective on Real People or That's Incredible or Give Me a Break. We don't go that high.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
It Was a Thing on TV podcast, episode 10, submission 120, The Chimp Channel. The Chimp Channel aired on TBS Superstation from June 10th, 1999 to December 16th, 1999, for a total of 13 episodes. You know, for a long time, I've been waiting. I've been dying since we came up with this podcast. I've been dying to discuss this show with you guys.
Yes, you have.
I couldn't tell.
Well, the Chimp Channel, I guess you'd say, evolved from a series of shorts on TBS that started back on February 1st, 1998, called Monkeyed Movies, which were films that parodied popular films or television programs that were currently being broadcast on TBS with the use of costumed chimpanzees and orangutans voiced by human actors. This usually would air during a dinner and a movie, like during the commercial breaks. They would have like the short little interstitials of the films that were being aired. Now, do you have any memories of these shorts?
I do have memories of the shorts. I believe some of them aired on the SMF TV block as well. And for those of you who don't know, SMF TV was Sunday morning in front of the television, where TBS would have their two acquired Hanna-Barbera series, which at the time were SWAT Cats and Two Stupid Dogs. They would air some of the interstitials when the episodes ran short.
Now, Mike, I know you told me that you have no memory of the original shorts.
I'm just claiming ignorance for this entire episode. I'm going to just sit here and be a casual observer.
Well, that's your loss, Mike. Let me tell you. So in 1998, TBS aired Tom Stern's Monkey Movies. There were 48 segments that were run during dinner and a movie in odd times slots, usually after sporting events. However, one day when a golf tournament ran short, TBS played about a half hour of Monkey Movies to unexpected results. The ratings actually actually increased, which gave TBS a good idea. How about we expand this concept and make it a regular show? So aiming to a young male audience, TBS would place the Chimp Channel on Thursday nights at 10:05 p.m. That's right, they were still doing Turner Time, baby, back in summer of 1989, following the network's top-rated professional wrestling show, WCW Thunder. An April 1999 press release noted the series' original title as Channel of the Apes. Get it? However, it would be renamed the Chimp Channel, and it would debut on June 10th, 1989. Now, not long into production, the creator of the concept of monkey movies, a man by the name of Tom Stern, would find himself at odds with TBS management regarding the direction of the series, which led to an incident on March 8, 1999, which he improvised a raunchy performance art piece that involved full nudity and breaking two liquor bottles on the show's set. Stern was promptly fired for the incident, despite claiming that he had permission from network officials to do what he called, quote-unquote, improv comedy, described as, quote, trying to get stuff off my chest about the wrong-headed direction the show was taking. On June 9th, one day before the Chimp Channel series premiere, Stern filed a breach of contract suit against TBS, Warner Brothers Domestic Pay TV, Telescopic Pictures, and Palomar Pictures in L.A., seeking damages of $1.65 million. Stern was represented in the suit by Los Angeles attorney David Wall. Production of the series continued for a few more months without its creative founder.
Mm-hmm. At what point, if you're TBS, do you just say, you know what, this is such a cluster muck, let's just, you know, take our losses and run?
What? Come on, Mike.
Okay, I totally get that if that happened, we wouldn't have this installment, but it just sounds like a mess from the start.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm having flashbacks of Lancelot Link's secret chimp. What's going on here?
Well, I was going to mention that, actually, because, I was going to mention Lancelot Link, but also Mr. Smith. I mean, realistically, those are probably the last two times that a simian, a monkey or similar creature was in a lead position on a TV show. And both of those lasted 13 weeks or 13 episodes. And by gosh, how long did Chimp Channel last?
Just 13 episodes.
Just saying.
So the show would evolve around a series of skits with interstitials about some of the on-camera stars and behind-the-scenes stars at the Chimp Channel. So here are some of the characters that are on the show. We have Brock Hammond, a 39-year-old male actor, fitting the self-absorbed masculine archetype similar to David Hasselhoff. We have George W. Heinlein, who is the Chimp Channel's veteran news anchor. We have Marina, a parody of Pamela Anderson, who is the super sexy blonde actress from the show Tree Watch.
Tree Watch.
Monkeys in slow motion?
Yes.
In standard clad swimwear?
We have Murray Price, who is the undisputed king of all celebrity interviews, who is a parody of who else? Larry King. He is played by an orangutan. And now we have the behind-the-scenes stars of the Chimp Channel. We have Bernard the Sarcastic Parrot, voiced by the legendary Maurice LaMarche, who is the parrot sidekick of Harry. We have Biff and Stan, who are a veteran writing team who provide material for the plethora of television genres. We have Ford Carter, a 58-year-old Australian self-made gazillionaire who owns the Chimp Channel in addition to newspapers, hotel chains, and other properties. He shares traits with Rupert Murdoch.
I was going to say, he couldn't be like a character of Rupert Murdoch. Australian, owns TV channels and newspapers. No, that's just pure coincidence.
It's also pure coincidence. Joke? Yeah, it's also pure coincidence that Rupert Murdoch happens to be a bit of a rival to Ted Turner, who at this time was still, I don't know if he was chairman or CEO. He was still involved with TBS, despite having sold it to Warner Brothers.
Yeah, he wouldn't lose all his power until the disastrous AOL merger. But do you get that the character is named Ford Carter? You get it? Ford Carter?
Yeah, they're presidents. He has a son named Reagan, I guess. I guess he has a daughter named Reagan, but let's talk about something else.
Maybe that would have been explored in season two. His daughter would have been named Reagan Bush.
And I hope that she doesn't have a relationship with Clinton.
Because if there would be Clinton Bush.
No, I'm not going there.
We have basically the main character of the show, Timmy Breyer, who is a young, bright-eyed intern at the Chimp Channel. He's a kind of naive young chimp who has a crush for Marina. We have Harry Waller, also voiced by Maurice LaMarche, who is the 52-year-old president of the Chimp Channel and a television veteran. And we have Candy Yupins, who is the Chimp Channel's makeup girl. Now, do you know who voiced Candy, the Chimp Channel makeup girl?
That would be Mindy Cohn, a.k.a. Natalie from The Facts of Life, a.k.a. Velma Dinkley.
Correct. Wow, now I didn't expect you to guess put the Velma Scooby-Doo reference up.
Oh, totally. I mean, you look at the entire cast. These are all voiceover legends. You have Richard Doyle, Jennifer Hale, Dwight Schultz, Howling Mad Murdoch, yes. Richard Steven Horvitz, who played Alpha 5 on Power Rangers. And Michael Donovan, who did a lot of work in Canada. So this had a lot of gravitas in the voiceover field.
And you've probably got the best in Maurice LaMarche.
Yes.
Yes.
The best.
And speaking of voiceovers, earlier today I found something, I guess before the premiere of the Chimp Channel, I found a clip from a WCW satellite feed, because obviously, as I mentioned before, WCW Thunder was the lead-in program to the Chimp Channel. So to plug the Chimp Channel, they had announcers Mike Tenay and Larry Zbysko do voiceover as monkeyed versions of themselves plugging the Chimp Channel. So we watched like 5 minutes of them recording voiceovers on YouTube for the commercial for the Chimp Channel. Somebody get me a banana.
Do we have that clip?
And here's the clip in question. It's a little redundant because it's done three or four times, but here it is.
Coming up next right here on the Superstation. It's the missing link in television. It's coming, a wild new series. It's a network composed of monkeys, the Chimp Channel.
Somebody... Shoot, I thought I had him when he turned. I went, okay.
I was okay. Now, coming up next right here on the Superstation. It's a missing link in television is coming. It's a wild new series about a network composed of monkeys.
Somebody get me a banana.
Snacks the chimp. Nah, that was horrible. That was the worst one of all.
All right, so you're going to keep talking after it goes blank?
No.
Good.
I want to be out by then.
Oh, I thought he said you had a couple seconds to go.
Oh, coming up next, right here on the Superstation. The missing link in television is coming. It's a wild new series. It's the Chimp Channel, next right here on TBS.
Somebody get me a banana. I'll play the whole thing. Yeah, this is fun. I love this. That'd be good. It'd be nice to go to our counterparts in Hollywood or something, and that'll be this.
Hey, legend, isn't it great to be a part of the premiere of the Chimp Channel?
Ooh, wait, I can't hear you, Mike. I got cauliflower in my ear.
Now, you know, Larry, as of late, I've just been feeling funky like a monkey all the time.
Quit listening to Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, no. The fans are chanting, Larry, Larry, Larry. I'm warning you. Don't do it. Don't do it. Oh, no. God.
Oh, I can't help it, Mike. They love me.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Yes, 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 yes.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Hey, stop it. You're going to make a human out of yourself.
Oh, Larry, don't go ape on me.
What is that gimmick on your butt, a diaper?
Oh, coming up next, right here on the Superstation. The Missing Link in Television is coming. It's a wild new series. It's the Chimp Channel, next right here on TBS.
Somebody get me a banana.
I think it's as good as it's going to get. I don't think it's going to get much better than you.
No.
I thought that was good. Oh, I thought that was good. I think so, too.
Hey, legend, isn't it great to be a part of the premiere of the Chimp Channel?
Ooh, wait, I can't hear you, Mike. I got cauliflower in my ear.
Now, you know, Larry, as of late, I've just been feeling funky like a monkey all the time.
Quit listening to Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, no. The fans are chanting, Larry, Larry, Larry. I'm warning you. Don't do it. Don't do it. Oh, no. God.
Oh, I can't help it, Mike. They love me.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Yes, 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 yes.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Hey, stop it. You're going to make a human out of yourself.
Oh, Larry, don't go ape on me.
What is that gimmick on your butt, a diaper?
Oh, coming up next, right here on the Superstation. The Missing Link in Television is coming. It's a wild new series. It's the Chimp Channel, next right here on TBS.
Somebody get me a banana.
Man.
Somebody get him a banana.
Somebody get the living legend Larry Zbysko banana, damn it. All right, so we have a review, Mike, from Variety on the Chimp Channel, and you're gonna love this. The lead, as if human beings telling lame Monica Lewinsky jokes was not painful enough, now we have chimpanzees doing it. Imagine there are now TV writers earning a living peddling multi-mammal humor. What a clever species we are. Too bad that chimps themselves would be hard pressed to find this one joke premise anything close to amusing.
I must have missed the joke.
In the review, the conceit here is that apes are running a cable network called the Chimp Channel, TCC for short. That's all chimps and orangutans all the time. All the movies, series, newscasts, commercials, and promos store and are produced by apes. The laughs, unlike bananas, do not come in bunches. The few that emerge trickle out noisily as if from a leaky faucet.
Wow, that sounds very potassium-filled.
Based on my experience watching that show, I can't disagree.
Okay, so what are your... So, Mike, you said you only lasted 8 minutes watching the Chimp Channel. So
yeah.
Give us your thoughts on what you saw.
Made me want to go back and watch more Automan.
Oh, wow.
I was pondering creating my own sequel to the Zippers episode. I lasted about 5, maybe 6 minutes into the premiere episode, and there was a skit they did about Jeopardy, which really was foolish, and not because it wasn't realistic, but ultimately in the end, all the chimpanzees or the monkeys were like swinging on the set. Or doing stupid stuff. It's like, okay, this is funny? Really? I just didn't see the humor. But also, and it didn't help that, maybe it's because of this first episode, it took like 5 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes to get just to the opening sequence. I don't know if they're trying to develop some sort of backstory or what they're have
probably,
you.
Yeah, they're probably trying to develop some sort of backstory.
But it took a painfully long time to get to the opening credits of the first episode. But also, I'm going to add one more thing. Since you were talking about the Variety review, I've got another review here from the Sun Sentinel, Tom Jicha. Apologies if I mispronounced the last name. Claimed that the Chimp Channel, quote unquote, the Chimp Channel sounds a lot funnier than it turns out to be on air. An occasional brief skit on a show like SNL or Mad TV, the Chimp Channel might be entertaining. However, Jicha also provided additional insight into the series' predicament, pondering, TBS seems to have its days and nights confused. Cleaned up of its occasional Randy references, there's even a snarky shot at Monica Lewinsky. How 1999? That's my editorializing there, the how 1999 part. The Chimp Channel might work for an audience at 10 in the morning on Saturday. At 10 at night on Thursdays, it's a King Kong-sized loser. So maybe that's the issue. They were aiming it at the wrong audience, trying to get adults to watch it when maybe it should have been more of a kid's show, going back to, like, as Greg said earlier, Lancelot Link.
I think
this show more works in concept on like an afternoon or morning show on weekends.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned earlier, Hanna-Barbera at the time had, I think you said SWAT Cats and Two Stupid Dogs. Two Stupid Dogs was on in 1999. I didn't know it ran that long. I know it's probably reruns, but still.
It was reruns, yeah.
Right, yeah, because I remember that was like original back in like 94 or so. But maybe they could have put it in that block, put it at 9 or I mean, they even mentioned 10 in the morning. Maybe it would work there, and also if the fare was lightened down to something that kids could enjoy or families could enjoy. I just don't see how this works as a primetime show, especially following wrestling, because you said this followed wrestling, right?
Yeah, followed WCW Thunder on Thursday nights.
I just see the two audiences being totally different. I don't see a wrestling audience really enjoying watching chimps making fun of TV or a TV network type of setting. That's just me. I think, yeah, if they rejiggered a little bit and actually made it like a kid's show, maybe it would have lasted longer. But also at the same time, yeah, given how much money TBS put into this, apparently, do you really want to air a show like that at 10 in the morning on Saturdays or Sundays or even earlier?
Yeah, and now this leads to sad news. On December 5th, 1999, TBS announced that they were going to cancel the Chimp Channel. TBS decided to shift a number of primetime changes onto their schedule. So WCW Thunder would shift from Thursday night to Wednesday night because this was around the time where WWF SmackDown premiered on UPN, cutting into their audience. And at this time, like, they were, WCW was beginning their fall, which would eventually lead to their end and sale to the WWF. And of course, this is late 1999, so this would be the period where Vince Russo was the head writer for WCW. So TBS decided to cancel the Chimp Channel and replace it with back-to-back films of the series Movies for Guys Who Like Movies. And WCW Thunder on January of 2000 would be followed in their lead-in program to the next show at 10 o'clock would be the 2000 version of Ripley's Believe It or Not. Do you remember the 2000 version of Ripley's Believe It or Not, guys?
The one with Dean Cain?
Yes.
Dean Cain and Kelly Packard?
Yeah. It wasn't Ripley's Believe It or Not in the true sense. I'm sorry. My allegiance for that show goes back to Jack Palance. That was so great in the early 80s.
Believe it or not.
Well, it almost seemed like it was a stunt show more than what I think, you know, really Ripley, what he's all about. You know, showing amazing you know, medical discoveries or amazing facts and stuff that you just wouldn't believe.
It was basically along the lines of Guinness Prime Time.
That's it. You took it right out of my mouth.
It's like
that's
part, exactly it was part the Jack Palance and part Mark Thompson setting up a challenge.
And I think if you balance it out, it wasn't 50-50. I would say it was more like 90-10. I mean, I really did not like the Ripley's Believe It or Not series then, because, again, like I said, it was more like Guinness Primetime than it was Ripley's Believe It or Not with Jack Palance back in the early to mid-80s. Mm-hmm. But also, another thing of note, Greg, this was TBS's first attempt at a original comedy.
Yes!
They did better as time went on. One of my favorite shows, and it only lasted, I think, about three seasons on TBS, was a show called 10 Items or Less, which itself was sort of a, I don't want to say ripoff, but in the same vein as Check It Out back in the 80s with Don Adams. I almost said Maxwell Smart.
Yeah, possible future entry, by the way.
Ooh, you may have to fight me over that one. I like Check It Out too, but we'll talk about that later. But also, I mean, this is now 15 years after the Chimp Channel, actually even a little bit longer than that. Then they basically made their entire 10 o'clock lineup comedies. They had Angie Tribeca, which was a great show, but they screwed that up in a number of ways. They had The Detour, which was a great show, but they screwed it up in a number of ways. And they had other comedies and still do have other comedies in there that they run basically one season per year.
Yeah, American Dad, which amazingly enough, they have not screwed up just yet.
American Dad, they have not screwed up. Yes, God give them points there.
They did screw up the hour of Drop the Mic and Joker's Wild by sending it to TNT, but that's neither here nor there.
They did screw that up. But they have some other shows. Miracle Workers is coming back from what I saw. Not that I watched it, but now it's going to be – this season is like medieval themed. Miracle Workers, you know, The Last Crusade or something like that. But, again, neither here nor there.
Hey, at least Daniel Radcliffe is getting work.
True.
So getting work, and also Steve Buscemi.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And actually, I should also mention one other show, which really was my favorite out of all these comedies, even though I loved Angie Tribeca, and I loved The Detour, at least the first couple of seasons. The one show, and I don't know why they dropped it. It was a great show. I thought it had decent ratings. Sullivan and Son.
Yeah.
About the Irish family that owned a bar. It had Brian Doyle Murray, and it had the father from The Wonder Years. I can't think of his name.
Dan Loria.
Yes, yes, yes. That was a great show. And Steve Byrne and Roy Wood Jr. I loved that show. And that just got canceled, like, with no – I mean, I didn't see anything online about it. That was a great show. I'd love to see that again. That may be where some of my money may be going to get that through a service or something.
Yeah, another block of shows that have replaced the Chimp Channel. Possible future entries to include Daisy Does America and He's a Lady.
What the heck is He's a Lady?
That's what I'm trying to say the same thing.
It is basically RuPaul's Drag Race without the camp.
Oh, that's terrible.
And then I'm guessing Daisy Does America is like saying Daisy Fuentes?
No, Daisy Donovan, British comedian. Travelogue through America.
Like that hasn't been done in the past.
Well, guys, you know, now that Turner has brought back wrestling on their networks with All Elite Wrestling on TNT Wednesday nights, I gotta ask, guys, do you think that now is the right time for a reboot of the Chimp Channel?
Is there ever a right time?
Guys, if they can reboot the XFL, I think that anything can be rebooted now at this point.
Craig has an amazingly accurate point. They could reboot the XFL, by the way, possible future entry. They could reboot anything.
This was so insipid. Like I said, I lasted maybe 8 minutes, and five of it was, you know, setting up the introduction in the first episode, and then finally getting to the introduction so I could get a snap of the title card for our damn graphic. But and then the other 3 minutes or so, 4 minutes, was that Jeopardy parody, which was really ridiculously stupid.
I just thought it was stupid because you didn't like the Roberto Benigni thing, which, to be honest, in 1999 was not even that funny.
No! I mean, the categories rhymes with blotocopier. Really? That's not really funny. I'm sorry. And then they don't get it right. Rhymes with blotocopier?
Yeah, no, that's pretty stupid.
It's lame writing. I mean, it has nothing to do with Roberto Benigni or the animals climbing the set by the end of the skit. There was just no meat on the bone.
I want my game show parodies to be taken seriously, damn it.
Said that. No, it has nothing to do with, you know, everything needs to be like a real TV show. I never said that, but you're supposed to be a comedy show. At least he was, delivering on the comedy.
He was spoiled by SNL, and I think we all were spoiled by SNL, especially SNL in the mid-90s, or the early to mid-90s.
No, I was a Mad TV person at this time. I did not watch SNL in the time of Sherry O'Terry and Will Ferrell and all that. Once the cast really got turned over in like 96, 97, nope, Mad TV is where I went. But I do like a good Sherry O'Terry doing Judge Judy. That is fun.
Hey, guys, do you want to see my swords collection? Okay, well, I guess that's going to have to do it. Sadly, this episode is going to come to an end, but I feel like we've given this show, the Chimp Channel, the do it deserves. I think people are finally going to be happy that someone out there is showing some love to the Chimp Channel.
So, Greg, are you trying to tell us that the Chimp Channel, it was definitely something on TV?
It was a thing on TV, Mike.
It definitely was a thing on TV. Maybe not a thing that a lot of us saw, but it was a thing 20 years ago.
Hey, it was a thing on TV, listeners. It's the manager, Todd Weber, here to tell you all about our weekly shows on Place to Be Nation Pop. Every Monday, we've got Brother Sister Rewatch podcast. They are currently looking at The Office. Just had episode 1 and 2 of season 5 of The Office drop. Kevin and Mary, great show. Check it out. Every Tuesday, Diamond Conversations talking baseball. Most recent episode featured Perry Giannis, founder of Expos Fest, the mighty Montreal Expos. They're coming back, at least in a part-time basis. Learn about that by listening to our show. Every Wednesday, as you know, it was a thing on TV, triple headers. Last week, they talked about Meow Manor, Lidsville, and Judge Wapner's Animal Court. Thursdays are Atherton Thursdays. Andy Atherton has a rotation of shows. The most recent one on Thursday was Pop Goes the Classics, talking about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Or is it Dwarfs? I'm not sure. And then on Fridays, we have the Hard Traveling Fanboys. The most recent episode was Off the Page, talking about Arrow. Great CW show coming to an end soon. Very soon. The two greatest episodes, in the opinions of the Hard Traveling Fanboys. Lots of other great content here. Most recently, show Sunday Groove. We had Greg Phillips joining David to talk about awesome debut albums. We have This Week in the NFL. Took a week off last week, but they'll be here with a Super Bowl preview soon. All kinds of stuff dropping on the Pop feed, including the Marvel Age podcast. Talked about 1972. episode for 1973 is coming very soon. We've got lots of great stuff. Also, there's the PDBN Wrestling Feed. It includes a dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE through yesteryear. The feed includes the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Wrestling Warzone, Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jenny and the Gems, Body Pressure Luck, new PTBN NXT, PTB NXT, I think that's what they're calling it. Great shows if you're into the pro wrestling. Subscribe to that feed as well. We've got the Jenny Position spinoff feed. Subscribe to that. Lots of great shows. Geek and Sassy Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, and more. Go to Facebook and search PTBN's Greatest Sitcom Tournament of All Time. Greatest Sitcom of All Time Tournament. There we go. And like it. Vote every day. There are four matchups. I'm still picking for Cheers. I'm still rooting for Cheers to pick the whole thing. I don't know. It's early. I'm not saying this as well as I should be. Check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We've got wrestling articles, football articles, pop culture articles, columns including Trent's SmackDown on Fox, This Week in the WWE, Polly's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion, as well as the weekly walk around the web. If you're shopping over at Amazon, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage or use placetobenation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon, helps us out. No cost to you. You're going to buy the stuff anyway. Let your favorite free provider of content, Place to Be Nation, get a quick, helps us pay the bills. All right, back to the It Was a Thing on TV triple header. Here comes Pitfall.
Welcome to the It Was a Thing on TV podcast, episode 11, submission 334, Pitfall, airing from September 14th, 1981 until September 1982 in syndication and also on Global in Canada. Hosted by Alex Trebek. Our best guess in the number of episodes is 130, give or take.
Today, all it takes is one wrong step, and shoot, you're in big trouble. Our players attempt to cross this bridge to win a prize package worth $2,500. Watch now as they brave the dangers to win thousands of dollars on Pitfall. Hang on, Eileen. You're standing on a pitfall. And Bill, but that's one, too. Now here comes the man to guide you through all the pitfalls, Alex Trebek.
Thank you, John Barton.
Chico did the open today. Thank you, Chico, very much. And Greg is here, as always, just about. And I'm here, as always, unfortunately. And Pitfall, I think Pitfall just didn't know what its identity was. I mean, there were bigger issues than that, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So there is two contestants. They did two games per episode. The first part of the game, I don't want to call it a qualifier, but it's what took you to the bonus round, which we'll get to in a little bit. There were questions of a psychological opinion-based basis, and people in the audience had little handheld devices, not unlike the Ask the Audience tabulators that the millionaire would use. And they'd say, okay, so, you know, which of these would you like to get as a birthday present? Would you like to get a diamond ring? Would you like to get flowers? Would you like to get chocolate? Or would you like to get cash? And so you just hit A, B, C, or D. There's a little computer sound effect as they tabulated the answers. And the two contestants would then answer what they thought was the most popular answer. And if they chose the most popular answer, they got 1 point. Or it is a point, but it wasn't shown on the screen as a point. It wasn't like a numerical readout. It was a scale with five segments, and one segment lit up for each correct answer they got right. And if you got five, you won the game. And that's actually the best scenario you could be in for the bonus round, which we'll get to in a little bit. But so you would light up one segment for each question you got right. The first, the third, and the fifth segments got you what's called a pit pass in the bonus round. We'll get to that in a little bit. So a lot of people won the game with, say, four answers right. So they'd get a pass for the first question right and a pass for the third question right. But since they didn't get the fifth question right, they wouldn't get all three pit passes. That was sort of the boring part of the game. I mean, they didn't add any sort of flavor to it. It was very bland and is very, very, I don't want to say opposite, but very different from what the pitfall bonus round was all about. And this is what people remember. So the game pitfall, the bonus round, was done on a set with 8 elevators. Not fancy Otis elevators like you'd see in a building or even like a freight elevator. Just basically a 8 different shafts with a little, you know, each compartment could raise or lower somebody. And not all that fast. Not as fast as an elevator. It'd probably go maybe about half a foot to a foot per second. So it's a very slow descent and a slow rise back to the top. So they would, they being the show, would flash the numbers of the different elevator sections. And there were 8 of them. And you wanted to get the numbers that were flashed twice because that's where the pitfalls were, the elevators that would sink you down. So you have this little light show where it flashes, let's say, section 1, then elevator 5, elevator 2, elevator 4, elevator 7, elevator 8, elevator 3, elevator 8, elevator 1, elevator 5. So they just do 11 lights, and the object is 3 of those numbers were flashed twice, and those 3 are the pitfalls. So the idea is remember which numbers you saw twice and get those pit passes. And if you only had 2 or 1, you're obviously taking a ride at some point if you get that far. Alex and the contestant would then go up in another elevator. So there's actually like 9 elevators here. They'd actually go up to the starting platform. And this is all trivia. This is not psychological based or opinion based. It was just straightforward trivia, reasonably easy trivia at that. The contestant would have 100 seconds to get across the bridge to claim a prize. Now, the prize originally started off at about $5,000 in value. After 13 weeks, the prize budget got slashed a little bit. The end prize was then worth about $2,500. You'd get $100 for each platform you got to if you didn't get all the way to the end. If you got to the end, you got the big prize. But about halfway through the season, after the first 13 weeks, 65 episodes, platform 5 was replaced with, instead of $100 or a total of $500 at that point, there'd be a small prize, a portable TV or something reasonably expensive. I mean, maybe in the $200 to $300 range. And then, again, like I said, if you got all the way across, you got the prize, and I think you got the money. I'm not 100% sure, but you supposedly also won the prize at the end, the $2,500 prize. I say supposedly. It's a big word here.
No.
Well, sometimes you bite off a little more than you can chew. I don't know anything about the cost of the elevators on Pitfall. Elevators are not cheap. Gosh, I know that because the elevator at my school keeps breaking down about 2 or 3 times a year, and there's always an issue about, oh, it's going to cost blank $1,000 to fix it, not even just to rebuild it or replace it. Just to fix it would be thousands of dollars. So in 1982, the production company behind Pitfall, Catalina Productions, went bankrupt. And as a result, many contestants plus staffers did not receive their pay or their winnings. I did find someone who did an interview. It was done with Chuck Donegan online. She was interviewed by Chuck Donegan, I believe, about 15 years ago or so. She was on Pitfall. she won many prizes. And actually, her run is at least partially on YouTube. All she ended up winning on Pitfall, actually earning, winning, not the prizes that she said she was going to get. All she got was a trip to Paris. And I think from what I saw or read, she was on for at least 4 episodes. So I think she amassed over $20,000 in prizes or winnings. And all she got was a trip to Paris. And to add insult to injury, it was just the hotel accommodations. Her husband had to pay for the airfare from Vancouver or wherever they lived to Paris.
Oh, Jesus.
So it wasn't even a full-fledged flight. It was just the hotel occupancy, not the flight there, not ground transportation after you arrive in Paris at Charles de Gaulle or Orly or wherever you're flying in from. Everything was paid for the contestant except for the hotel room.
Wow.
At least she got something. At least she got something. As I mentioned, so the staff wasn't paid. And sort of famously, and this has been mentioned by Alex Trebek in the past in interviews, he still has a copy of his bounce check from Catalina Productions in his basement office on the wall. And actually, we're going to put a little audio in here. This is courtesy of the Archive of American Television via the Wink Martindale YouTube page. Alex explaining the whole situation, why he didn't get paid, and then what happens in the future.
What do you remember about the series Pitfall?
It's the only time in my life that I have been stiffed for a salary. I was offered a job by Bill Armstrong, who had worked with Peter Marshall on Hollywood Squares, and he was up in Canada doing the show, and he said, would you like to come up and host? I said, sure. So now I get offered a job in Canada, and they send me the paperwork, and they said, you must be a member of the Canadian Union, otherwise we can't hire you. And I was a member of the Canadian Performers Union, ACTRA, and I said, fine. So then I get up there, and I'm approached by one of the Canadian Union people in Vancouver who says, you can't work this show. And I said, why? He said, they're not signatories. I said, what do you mean they're not signatories? Part of my contract says that I have to be a member of the union. I assumed that they must be signatories in order to put that provision in there. So there was a big fight. The head of the show came to me and said, if you don't perform, we're going to sue you, because we have a contract, and the union said, if you perform, you're going to be in deep trouble with the union because they're not signatories. Finally, at the 11th hour, they resolved their differences. And then we did 13 weeks of programming, and they paid me. And then we did another 13 weeks of programming, and they didn't pay me. And I found out, then I went to the union, I said, you got to help me here, they're not paying me. They said, well, there's really nothing we can do. I said, what? I stood up for you guys in order to get them to become signatories, and now you're not willing to stand up for me. And then I pursued it through some other entities, and I discovered through a lawyer that on the scale of those who are to be paid, I was about 35th on the list. Somebody who had done work at the studio, carpentry work or whatever, was way at the head of the list because they had a mechanics lien. And as a performer, as the host, I was way down at the bottom of the list, and I could not prevent them from marketing the program, even though they had never paid me. And I still have that check on the wall downstairs behind my desk. That's the only time in my life someone has stiffed me for hosting or doing work on a program. But things turned around. I got other shows after that.
And a big one came soon thereafter.
What was that?
Jeopardy.
Oh, it did? Good for me.
And yeah, Alex went on to bigger and better things. In 1983, he did host a revival of his NBC game show Battle Stars, the all-new Battle Stars. He also hosted a little pilot called Malcolm.
Well, in 1983, he would also host another little pilot.
Well, he would, but the difference between that pilot and this one is Malcolm is a future entry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But then he did host a couple of pilots for another show, which you may have heard of. And actually, you think about it, one of us has been on the show, one of us is in the pool to be on the show, and Greg has seen this show for about 35 years.
Yes, it's literally been on the entire since the year I was born. So it spans my entire life.
And of course, what show are we talking about? We're talking about
Classic Concentration.
High Rollers. Oh, no. I actually thought you were going to say High Rollers, Classic Concentration. Well, that would come later. I mean, he had a very successful 1980s, to say the least. Had many shows after Pitfall that had a decent lifespan. But obviously, we're talking about Jeopardy, the show that is still on the air now, 35-plus years later.
Yes, and still going strong to this day.
Yeah, and like I said, Alex still has the check framed, the bounce check, $49,000. And that's in 1982 money. Now, I know that's 1982 Canadian money, but still, that's a good chunk of change that he got stiffed on.
Hold up. I'm going to check to see if inflation calculator actually Canadian money.
It's called Canadian Inflation Calculator, eh?
It's Inflation Calculator Bank of...
Inflationcalculator.ca.
That's the best Alan Thicke I think I've ever heard.
No, the best Alan Thicke I ever heard is from. The best Alan Thicke I ever heard is from Gilbert Gottfried. Let's get that straight. Okay, $49,000 Canadian in 1981. Comes out to $130,730.47 in 2019.
Which, and how much of that is in American?
Well, that'd be about 100,000 American. I think it's about an 80% conversion rate. I think a dollar Canadian is 80 cents U.S. or thereabout. But still, it's somewhere in the range of about $100,000 to like that $130,000 number you mentioned. So it's not insignificant in the grand scheme of things, but dang. In addition, Chico mentioned that this aired on Global. Reruns of this show ran well into the late 90s.
What?
Seriously?
On Canadian television. And that's actually a reason why there's, from what I've heard, there's so many episodes out there. If you go on YouTube, there has to be at least probably, I'd say about a dozen episodes out there, maybe even a little bit more. And yes, some station, I want to say maybe it was in Hamilton, Ontario, and there was an intrepid game show video trader who had lived in Hamilton and had access to this channel. And he recorded a number of episodes. So, yeah, I mean, it's feasible. I've seen shows that, and I'm sure there's shows that are on TV right now that have rerun for 15 years on the same network. And I'm not necessarily talking cable. I mean, look at, like, everything Byron Allen, with all due respect. You know, you have Comics Unleashed. They're showing episodes from 2005 and 6, for heaven's sakes. With comics that are deceased.
Wow.
So
Richard
Jenny, there you go. I mean, it's in the realm of possibility.
I was going to say Richard Jenny, who may be in a future entry.
Who, yeah, yes. You did submit that, yes.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's in the realm of possibility that they may show. Yeah, a 15-year-old rerun would be showed. So, yeah, I mean, who am I to not believe this person who lives in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and had access to whatever channel, you know, the Global affiliate, or maybe it was on CTV, or who knows. But, yeah, reruns aired for like 15 years after it had been canceled. And even still then, they still hadn't gotten money to pay Alex Trebek. Well, yeah, I know Catalina had been bankrupt. Well, that might be the reason why the TV station or the network got the show so cheap, because who are they going to pay? The production company? Production company doesn't exist anymore. I don't know that much about entertainment law, so maybe I'm just talking out of my butt.
Especially Canadian entertainment law.
Yeah, especially, yeah, because they do have some interesting rules regarding if you use foreign talent and stuff like that. We're not going to get into that. But, yeah, so the idea was for the bonus round, I think we sort of deviated a little bit. You want to get across the bridge in 100 seconds. And if you hit a pitfall, you went down into the bottom, the lower floor. And it took probably about, I'd say, 10 seconds to go down. And you couldn't answer any questions until you got to the bottom. So that was wasted time. But then once you got one question right, you came back up. And you continued. And the thing is, if you had a pit pass for that elevator number, you had to give it to Alex. That would allow you to cross over and proceed with the game. And there was at least one time somebody forgot to give Alex a pit pass, went down, and really wasted a ton of time. And this, the tragedy of this was it was on the first elevator. So this person was at elevator one. I'm not even joking. 80 seconds? 70 seconds? And I think ultimately they got to like number four or number five. But yeah, you forgot your pit pass, and that basically screwed your game. Well, it wouldn't necessarily have screwed her game, but I mean, she got like nothing right for well over a minute. The music on Pitfall is great. Sometimes the contestants weren't so great, and Alex may have gotten a little carried away. Here's a little footage of one of the bonus rounds, and this is courtesy of Chuck Donegan. Enjoy, especially about 3 minutes and 45 seconds from now.
Paul, and her name is Rosemary Smiley, and in a moment, Rosemary, I'm going to take you upstairs to our bridge and see if you can cross those eight sections safely to win a big prize. Dan did beautifully, won over $17,000. You could exceed that total very easily. You're a good player.
I hope so.
All right. As you know, in our light show, we light up each section at random, but the three pitfalls, those bad sections in which you lose time, are going to light up twice. The five good sections will light up one time only. You ready?
Right.
Let's dim the lights, turn around. Here we go. Figure it out. You earn two pit passes in the match. Make your selection right now. You have to use some strategy, of course, if you know, if you're sure where all the pitfalls are, whether you want to take the two passes early on or later in the round, if you feel confident about answering questions. Number one? No? Number five. Got number five. One more to pick. Five and seven. Let's go up top. See if it works for her. Here we are, Rosemary. Coming up in the elevator, she says, I didn't get them. She's not certain that she made the right choice. Did you think number one was a pitfall?
Yeah.
Okay, I did too. Well, you know then that what's going to happen is that early on, if you give me a right answer, you're going to take a fall, go down and lose some time, but it's good to get it out of the way early, because then it's clear sailing for you. Every correct answer, an additional $100 in cash. You'll have a total of 100 seconds. You've got two pitfall passes in your hand, and hopefully you're going to make it all the way over to here, so you get to enjoy this prize.
You and a friend will be on your way to sunny Playa Blanca, Mexico. Your vacation package includes round-trip airfare, ground transportation, 3 weeks, double accommodation, and your meals. Rosemary, your prize is worth $5,080.
Fabulous vacation. I know you want to get away from all the bad weather and everything like that, and work and people who bug you, right?
Right.
Go there with somebody special in your life. Here we go. In Snow White. 100 seconds on the clock. When the witch wanted to know who was the best-looking kid in town, who did she ask?
The mirror.
The mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall. Go ahead, number one. And it's a pitfall, as we thought. But that's all right. It's right at the beginning. You've got over 80 seconds, and we're going to stop the clock if you give me a correct answer to this one. What would Robin Hood stick in his quiver?
Ha!
Arrows. What famous naval hero got sent home pickled in a keg of rum?
Pass.
Lord Nelson. Which is the Buckeye State, Oklahoma or Ohio?
Oklahoma.
No, it's Ohio. What does a milliner do for a living?
Mend shoes.
No, makes hats. According to military slang, what's the state of things when there's been a snafu?
Pass.
It's all messed up. There's only one animal you can get lard from. Which animal?
Pass.
The hog. Name the mythical Scottish village that appears for one day every 100 years.
Pass.
Brigadoon. Where would a woman wear her yashmak?
On her head.
On her head, no, that's not specific enough. Over her face, it's a veil worn in public. Budapest is the capital of what country?
Oh, Turkey?
Oh, Hungary. True or false? The fingerprints of identical twins are always the same.
False.
False, that's right. Stop the clock. Bring her up. Hey, how about that? Rosemary, are you having a good time?
Great.
You like it down there in the pits, don't you? I went through about 8 questions. You used up our whole questions for the week.
Oh, really?
We have no more to go. But you've got 25 seconds, so let's pick it up and start from there. All right, let's see if you can make up for it now. At the market, they are sold as acorns, giant yellows, and crooknecks. What are they?
Nuts.
Squashes. In professional football, you have what team for Washington?
Pass.
The Redskins. The continent is called Australia. How many countries are actually on that continent?
10.
No, 1. Australia. Where is the Rosetta Stone? In the British Museum or in Tiffany's in New York? Oh, we're out of time. And you have set a new record. You've made it to square one. Here, I'll show you what it's like to get to the end. Come along with me, Rosemary. We're going to take a commercial break and show everybody where the pitfalls were. You come with me. Yes. Goodbye.
The high road. Now is going to be the last time I saw Alex like that.
How wrong were you?
Oh man, he roasted the absolute crap out of that contestant.
Yeah, this is Alex Trebek at peak Alex Trebekish.
Yeah, he could be snarky at times, but that was like top tier Alex Trebek. Well, I think you guys, I found a new show you guys can watch. I think both of you said that you've never seen this until now.
I've seen it.
I haven't seen it in like forever, though.
Okay, never mind. Then we'll edit that part out.
Yeah, I've seen it in the last 6 months.
But yeah, there's a ton of it online. And there's, like I said, probably at least a dozen episodes and clips. And yeah, Alex is a little different now than he was back then. He's still a little bit goofy. He's more lovable. I mean, I think Alex Trebek back in 81, 82 was just another game show host because he had hosted so many shows, some good, some bad, but most didn't last much more than about 2 years. And then he hit the big one.
Malcolm? Okay, not Malcolm.
Who said it was the new Battlestars?
Oh, okay.
I thought it was going to be To Tell the Truth.
Hey, that was a good year for him.
Oh, yeah.
He had steady employment.
Oh, man. Yeah. Alex Trebek was raking in the money in 1990, and that's not getting into the money he got from Phone Jeopardy.
No, he had very steady employment, at least on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Between Classic Concentration and To Tell the Truth, 1990 and the first part of 91 were very good times in the Trebek household. Oh, and also we forgot about 1990. What else did he do in 1990?
Super Jeopardy.
Future Induction Super Jeopardy. Am I right? It's coming. We won't tell you when, but it's coming. Sooner rather than later.
Well, if you have an idea of what's coming up on Jeopardy, I guess you have an idea of when that's going to be.
Ooh, little teaser. Yeah, Greg's not wrong. Greg is definitely not wrong about his statement there. If you have an idea about what's going on with Jeopardy, what was announced within the last about 2 weeks or so, you know when we're going to be covering Superman Jeopardy and its partner in crime, Monopoly. But that's a future episode. We're not worried about that right now. What we do know is Pitfall. I think you guys can agree with me on this. Pitfall.
That was definitely a thing on television.
It was a thing on TV. And it was a thing on Canadian TV, too. So we're crossing international boundaries.
It was a thing on TV, eh?
Well, that's it for this episode. Thank heavens. As always, remember, we're on social media. We're on the internet. We're everywhere. Just point your browser in the direction of itwasathingontv.com. That'll link you to everything associated with our site. Until next week, and next week, I'm not going to say what's coming next week. Two episodes again. We're going to do two episodes for a while at the very least. This might be a permanent thing, but there's two episodes that I know I have been anticipating doing since we first started doing the podcast. Do you gentlemen feel the same?
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yes. These are going to be two great episodes. One of the shows is a show that a number of people said, are you going to cover the show? Are you going to cover the show? And I said, oh, we got it covered. Not going to say what it is, but yeah, we have it covered. But then the second episode next week isn't about a show per se. It's about a much bigger thing. It's not about a show, and it's not about a short-lived show, but it's more of a general TV thing. I think it's pretty cryptic. I mean, I'm not giving too much away. But, yeah, both episodes, the first one definitely is going to be a good one, I think. But the second episode next week, we're going to make some revelations that might just, like, blow the internet apart. Maybe not blow the internet apart, but given the grand scheme of what we're going to talk about, we have made revelations and discoveries that really, like, transcend television. Is that an appropriate description?
Yeah. You know what? I think that's vague enough.
Yeah. I'm not
looking for vagueness. I think that's just an apt description of what next week is. We're going to make some discoveries on something television-centric, which might blow your mind. Realistically.
And it will add more to the lore of the show when we tell you what exactly all this stuff we have discovered in the whole time we've been doing this show in these 2 months. It's all going to lead up to that episode.
Yes, and actually the two shows next week are connected, and actually the... The first show is connected to the grand scheme of the basis of the second show, but we're not going to get into that. It's going to be a good week next week. Next week's going to be a real fun set of episodes. And again, it might be very mind-blowing and, oh my gosh, why didn't I think of that? But we'll save that for next week. As always, Chico, thank you very much for joining us. And Greg, thank you very much for joining us. And you listening on your devices, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week for two really good episodes. And I'm not even like this isn't hyperbole. They're going to be great episodes. I'm going to have so much fun with them next week. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to It Was a Thing on TV. Piffle's on in the middle of the night. I don't like it because it's not right. Alex Trebek almost got into a fist fight. It wasn't a very pretty sight. I think I sounded more like Randy Newman more than Gilbert Gottfried doing Alan Thicke.
Alex Trebek hosts the show. Primitive Peter.
Running in the thick of the, running in the pitfall of the night. Running in the pitfall of the night. I can't.
Oh my god, this is the iron. Hey, it was a thing on TV. I'm Alan Thicke, burning in the thick of the night.
Future induction.